Welcome back, dear listeners, to another episode of Trafficked. Today, I'm honored to interview Jean Gray, a beautiful survivor who, for the very first time ever, is sharing her story with us. Jean is currently studying for her LCSW so that she can help others overcome in the way she has. Welcome, Jean. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's an honor. Your story is unique and yet tragically not. It started very young. Would you take us back to any memories from before it started?
Actually, I have no memories from before it started because it began at birth for me. My father was a Japanese concentration camp survivor, a sadist and a pedophile. My mother was a santera, a priestess of Santeria, who took things to the extreme. I was born in Arabia because the father was an engineer with the airlines, and I was born a pair of twins. However, the doctor announced us as a boy and a bean, bean being Arabic for girl. My mother took this to mean that she had given birth to twin boys, and my mother had a severe dislike for boys. So essentially what she did is she checked to make sure we weren't black. She named us. He was Philip and I was Colin. And then she gave us to the servants to take care of. And that was perfect for the father because it meant that he had free access to us. And he began using diaper pins to torture us to the point where we no longer even cried for help. And he did that for the first 2 years of our lives.
Were those your first memories, Jean? The diaper pin.
Those are my first memories, yes.
Understood.
I can remember the nursery and I can remember the diaper pins.
And then what do you remember?
Well, besides using the diaper pins, Father had us trained. In Arabia at the time, you could hire someone to teach you how to have sex. So he had us trained to fellate both men and women, and he started using us.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you speak about your twin brother in the past tense. Is he no longer alive?
He is not. When I was two, I developed meningitis, and I went to the hospital without him, of course. My mother came to the hospital in an act of good parenting. And while I was there, she realized that I was female. This was the first she had realized that I was female. And she was thrilled with that because it meant that I could follow in her footsteps. In my family, there's a strong tradition of female santeras, so I could follow in her footsteps. I was female, but it meant that Philip was useless to her. So in order to raise her ache or her personal power in Santeria, she sacrificed him. My hand was actually on the knife below my mother's when she killed him.
Was she ever charged in that time?
No.
Location, was that ever done?
No, she was not. My birth certificate was rewritten by a doctor who was a family friend. So I appear as an only child. However, my grandmother was able to confirm for me that Philip did exist.
At what age were you when your grandmother told you these things?
I was older when my grandmother told me these things. I was in college by the time she told me those.
Did you have memories of Philip or that were just unconfirmed? Or
I actually do have memories of holding his hand and it being grainy and sticky in mine. Yes.
What else did your grandmother tell you?
Well, the rest I sort of remembered for myself, to be honest. About a year after the meningitis, we moved to Holland. And in the living room in Holland, my father took my virginity with a number two yellow pencil and then his body. I believe my mother was jealous. The next day, she had me bring a suitcase into the kitchen where my pet guinea pig's cage was. And she lectured me about how I was a demon child and I had caused this to happen and I was terrible. And she skinned half of my guinea pig and put us in the suitcase together until he scratched and clawed and bit his way to death in order to get revenge for what my father had done. I bought into feeling like I was a bad person and I was irredeemable. And about a week later, I jumped off the third story balcony in an attempt at suicide. That was my first attempt at suicide.
How many attempts were there over the years?
There was a lot of wishing I were dead. There were only two actual attempts. Once when I was a child and once when I was an adult and I was in the process of healing from the abuse. So.
Understood. Did the rape and sexual assault with your father stop at that point or accelerate?
No, it actually accelerated. His taking my virginity was sort of the opening of the business, as it were. Both my mother and my father would hire me out to friends and that sort of thing.
And Jean, how long did that continue? What were the ages?
Starting at about 3 or 4, which is when he took my virginity, to, for him, about 12. I think I sort of aged out of his preference when I was 12. And my mother continued it until I left, actually, at the age of 25.
By it, do you mean she continued selling you?
Yes. Yes.
Was it always to acquaintances or so-called friends, or were they strangers as well?
They were mostly people that one of my parents knew or knew of through a friend, that sort of thing.
What did your family do with the money? I mean, you mentioned that as an infant, there was a caretaker. It would seem ostensibly that would mean that there was some family wealth already there. What were they doing with this money?
I don't honestly know. They lived well, you know, filet mignon and that kind of thing. But it wasn't for me, so I didn't really know what they did.
And the day-to-day life with them, was there any sense of normalcy as this was happening in between when you were being sold?
You have to understand, I developed dissociative identity disorder as a result of being abused. So I literally switched personalities when I was being abused and when I was not. so that I could function normally at the times when I was not being abused.
Understood. At 25, when you left home, where did you go? What did you do?
Well, there's actually more to my story, but at 25, I actually accidentally revealed that I was still being abused. I had a therapist, and I had told my therapist about what the father had done. But he basically stopped when I was 12. And then my parents got divorced when I was 17. So he left the picture entirely.
So when you revealed this to the therapist, what happened? Were you still underage?
I was 25, but I mentioned to her, I was just griping. I happened to have been very tired that night and cranky. And I was just griping to her as I was about to leave. I said, I wish I didn't have to go home and bathe my mother. And she stopped me and said, you're going home to bathe your mother? And I didn't think that that was anything unusual. I thought that that was something that was just normal. But she reacted very strongly to it and realized I was being abused. And by the next day, she got me into a homeless shelter for mentally ill homeless people. And from there, I went on. I actually had a very hard time remaining in the homeless shelter because I wanted to return home. Because I was so trauma bonded to my mother that I didn't understand what was wrong with what was happening.
So if we can go backward for a moment, when I asked you about what happened when you left home at 25, you said that there was more to your story. What else is there that you'd like to share that I didn't give you a chance to share?
Well, my mom continues her abuse. We keep moving from country to country, so it's very easy for her to abuse me. And Philip is not the only one that she killed, in all honesty. My mother has to have been psychopathic or something along those lines. Our next move was to the Philippines. And I was a hard to handle child. I would go chasing after the dog. I would go chasing after my friends. I would play in the backyard, get myself filthy, that kind of thing. So in order to teach me to obey, she bought a boy. She bought him from the local village and she chained him up in an abandoned building. And she left him there for a day or two until he was dehydrated and starving. And then she took me to him. And in order to teach me not to disobey and to protect the family and to protect her, she flayed him alive. She actually removed the skin from his arms and legs and from his skinny little chest. He was my age. And then she cut great wings into his back so that he looked like an angel as he died. And that was what happened to bad boys and girls, to demon children, that kind of thing. So she did that.
Did that alter your behavior?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There is no way that I would have disbehaved after that. That was terrifying. And one of the scariest parts of it, actually, is that I woke up in my own bed not beside the boy. I woke up clean and tucked into bed. And it was so surreal that I came out into the living room expecting to find carnage. And there was my mother reading the morning paper. There was my father sitting and having his breakfast. It was a phenomenal mindfuck, is what it was.
Yes. After your parents divorced, did you ever see your father again?
I saw him once. He requested that I join him at his father's bedside because his father was dying, my grandfather. My grandfather provided the repairs whenever I was damaged. He was a physician. And if I was torn too badly or anything like that, we would go to Holland and he would fix me on his bed. But he was dying, so Father requested that I be there. And I did. And the old man actually apologized to me, which was very surprising. But my father, although he had grown a lot older, was still the same person. And in the hotel room, he did ask me, would I have sex with him? To which I said a resounding no. But, and he was too weak to make me at that point. So that was good. That was, yeah. One time where I was able to reclaim my power to a degree.
Yes. After you left home at 25, did you ever see your mother again? Is she still alive?
I did. Yes, she is alive. She lives on Long Island with her new husband, who is a really good guy, but just blind to everything. I did about 25 years of therapy first. It started with art therapy. I happened to have a phenomenal art therapist. And she worked with me through the father stuff. Then with talk therapy. Then with DBT and EMDR. And I needed all of those before I could return home and confront mom. I did do that, and it was odd because she had grown very old and weak, and she was missing a leg. And she kept saying, I love you, I love you, I've missed you, I've missed you. But I knew I couldn't buy into that as much as I wanted to. I really wanted her to love me. But as much as I wanted to, I knew that my cousin, who was going to be the santera after my mother, was standing in the kitchen and waiting. And I just couldn't believe for me to leave to support my mother. And I just could not. I could not believe her. That was the last time that I actually believed that she was a loving and caring mother.
Have you seen your cousin? Do you know if or suspect if the same ritualistic abuse is going on at her hands?
I have avoided my cousin. I believe that she's probably a little bit more shy of killing than my mother was. For my mother, it was very simple. There was an immolation of my mother became, when we came back to America, my mother became the leader of a gang of drug pushers because the santera before her had been a loan shark and a drug pusher. And she had run this gang. So my mother became leader of this gang, and she actually had a man immolated by pouring gasoline on him and setting him on fire for doing something wrong. So she had no qualms whatsoever with killing. That was, and I don't believe my cousin will.
Was this all in Long Island? This is the United States at this point, you said.
This is the United States at this point. This is in Queens. She had him immolated in a metal warehouse. And my uncles took care of the body.
And you said you don't anticipate that your cousin will. Was this meeting with your mother long ago? Is your cousin newly the one in power, so to speak?
I don't know if she has come to power or when she will come to power, but I know that she slated to be the next.
Do you fear for yourself knowing that they know that you know the atrocities that have been committed?
Not anymore. Not anymore.
And how is that, Jean? How did you come to arrive at that place?
Well, I used to have an alter who would report back to her. And when he was revealed and stopped from doing what he did and integrated, my fear of that went away. He was keeping them abreast of where I was, of what I was doing, of whether or not my behavior met their demands, that kind of thing. And he would have told them that I have been to hospitals and talked to therapists and that kind of thing. They know I've told by now.
And how was he discovered and how was he stopped?
He was actually discovered in a hospital. I've been hospitalized several times, but during this particular hospitalization, I had a fixation with the phones because he was trying to report back, and the staff is actually what stopped me. And a very good therapist on staff discussed it with me until we figured out that, yes, in fact, I do have an alter who is reporting. This alter my mother created deliberately in order to report back to her.
And just the clarification of the fact that it was happening allowed it to stop?
Well, there was a lot of internal communication and there was a lot of EMDR and that sort of thing to help get him integrated. But yes, he had to realize that he was not a separate entity from us. So that we're really one unit. And when he's reporting, he's also reporting on himself.
Yes.
And if they kill us, they will kill him.
So when you talked about speaking at hospitals, and is that something you're doing now to inform healthcare workers the things to look out for or something? Would you provide some details on that?
I would love to do that, to be honest, but no, I was speaking at a hospital because I was in the hospital.
I understood. Okay.
Yes.
So often people feel that it's impossible to overcome the traumas of the past. And yet here you are, you seem to be this living proof that it is possible to overcome with the right help. What would you say to those listening who've been traumatized in their own way about what is in fact possible for them on the other side and how they might get there?
It's absolutely possible to get there. Sometimes it takes a long time. It took me 25 years before I could master the gumption to go back and confront my mother. And it's not something I would recommend that anybody do. I did it with a lot of support. I did it with a lot of help. And in the end, even though I had talked about everything with my therapist, I needed the EMDR to release some of the emotional impact of what had actually happened to me, so that I could live a normal daily life I still have fears, particularly about demons, because my mother used to say that I was a demon and that demons would come and get me and bring me to their own. But also anxiety, extreme anxiety I go through. But I live a normal day. I go to work. I go to school. And I function normally for the most part. You know, it is possible. It does get better. Give it the time. Give it the time. Give it the years. It takes years to develop within us, and it takes years to be healed.
Thank you for shining a light on the path, Jean, and letting us know that it really is possible. And thank you for so beautifully, openly, courageously sharing your journey. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you or someone you know has been taken for sex trafficking, or you suspect that's happening, call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. With your help, we can stop human trafficking now. To keep up with all of our latest work, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Trafficked Series. Please be sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to our podcast. I am your host, Cheryl Hunter, and we are here to end human trafficking. So remember, if you see something, say something. This is a Conveyor Media production. Host and creator, Cheryl Hunter. Executive producers, Colin Whelan and Rebecca Sermons. Head producer, writer, editor, Celine Beth Calderon. And music by Mickey O'Brien.